Well, there are some statements that you hear from time to time, and the significance of what was said, the true significance, doesn't hit you until some time later. It's a bit like one of those earthquakes where there are aftershocks, where the aftershocks are actually more powerful than the initial quake. At times, you might think a statement to be, oh, that's interesting. But then later you think, oh, there was more to that than I thought. And that's true of our text in Luke 24, verse 18. The context here is the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, which occurred on the previous Friday. That was an event that shook the nation. Everyone who was in the city for the Passover was aware of the brutal execution of the people's rabbi, Jesus of Nazareth. It was a shocking event that seized the consciousness and that became the talk of the town. But for the followers of Jesus Christ, this was not the subject for idle speculation or chat. It wasn't tittle-tattle. For them, they were stunned. The bottom had fallen out of their world. It's clear from the words of Cleopas that they had held a high hopes for Jesus and what he would do for them. But those hopes now lay in ruins. They were smashed to smithereens. It was now some 3 days later. Maybe they were beginning to come to terms in a small way with what had happened. But now even that is thrown into complete chaos and confusion, because the ladies who had been to the tomb had come back with reports that his body wasn't there and that they'd seen some angels. And the angels had said he was risen. This was immensely difficult for them to get their heads round. And Cleopas, who was one of the followers of Jesus, but not one of the inner circle, he decides the time has come to leave the city with all its bustle and to return to Emmaus, about 7 miles away. And once he's out of the city, out of earshot, out of that febrile, hostile environment, he falls into an animated discussion with his companion. They were discussing the events that had rocked their world and rocked their faith. And you can imagine the sort of things they bounced off each other. Why didn't Jesus stop it? Why did he acquiesce so meekly to what they did to him? Why didn't our leaders see that he was the Messiah? What was it? What was it that the women saw? Why did they come back with these strange tales? And these two were so deep in conversation, batting the ideas backwards and forwards, that they didn't seem to be aware that somebody was catching them up. Not until he was almost upon them. Maybe they heard his footsteps behind them. And when he draws near to them, they don't seem to recognize him. They've got no recollection of ever having met him before. And he opens the conversation with them. He asks them, you know, what manner of communications are these that ye have one to another? What is it you're talking about? You seem quite animated about it. What is it? And he can see that this conversation was actually, it was breaking their hearts. They were sad. Their lives, their hearts, their whole world was broken. And the implication is that the question that he asks brings them to a standstill. And maybe there was an initial silence, that they weren't quite sure whether he was someone they could trust. And so the result was a counter question from Cleopas. Art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem, and hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? Are you the only person in the city that doesn't know what's happened? Then there's a counter question. What things? And it's that draws out of Cleopas the explanation of the sadness and the discussion that they were having. But I want us to focus upon that first counter question, the question of Cleopas. Art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem? Now those words are haunting. Those words are full of irony. But those words are worth exploration. Because these words, they address and expose an uncomfortable reality in the relationship of Jesus Christ to men and women in different settings. And I want us to explore this in three directions. Firstly, I want us to consider Jesus Christ, a stranger in his world. Jesus Christ, a stranger in his world. Jesus Christ was indeed a stranger in Jerusalem. He didn't go there that often. He didn't spend much of his ministry there. He went there for those annual Jewish festivals. But it seems that every time he went there, he was a stranger there. And there was something very unique about that strangeness. He seemed to be a stranger there in a way that no others were strangers there. You kind of get a feel for that when the disciples are showing him the big stones of the temple and its glories. It's almost as if they're taking somebody on a tour. Doesn't that ring a bit strange? Jesus was a stranger there. John says something about it in the opening of his gospel. He says this: he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Jesus Christ was a Jew, fully a Jew. He came to his own kith and kin, his own countrymen, and they received him not. He belonged to them in a way that he didn't belong to any other people group, but he wasn't welcome. Despite all their privileges, their unique privileges, but despite all of that Old Testament pointing forwards to him, despite all of that prior knowledge that they should have had of him, they didn't know him. He was a stranger to them. But worse was actually this was part of a bigger thing. Luke has already said in his gospel back in chapter 13, he's recorded the words of Jesus. Nevertheless, I must walk today and tomorrow and the day following, for it cannot be that a prophet perish out of Jerusalem. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, which killest the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto thee. This rejection of Jesus, this not knowing him, was part of a much bigger, longer history of not knowing and not receiving the messengers whom God sent. But the key thing for us to understand is that this status that Jesus had as a stranger in Jerusalem did not arise from his desire. It was not the result of his mindset. Jesus Christ was not aloof. No, he walked among the people. He showed great patience with them. He demonstrated grace to them. He spoke the words of heaven to them. In fact, Cleopas even says here, he says that he did, verse 19, a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. Everyone knew what Jesus of Nazareth had both said and done. There were multiple proofs of who he was and his purpose for being among them. But also we need to understand what Jesus goes on to say in chapter 13. He says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, which killest the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together as a hen doth gather her brood under her wings, and ye would not. Jesus is saying, my desire for you is to gather you to me. But there's this resolute, stubborn resistance. You would not. That was the cause, that was the root of this strangeness that Jesus experiences in Jerusalem. Interestingly, John tells us that that strangeness was bigger and broader than Jerusalem. Before he says he came unto his own and his own received him not, the verse before says this, he was in the world. And the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. This is amazing. This world is Jesus' world. And when Jesus came from heaven to this world, he was a stranger here. And Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is still a stranger in his world. He's a stranger in England. He's a stranger in Droitwich. He's a stranger to middle-aged and old. He's a stranger to wealthy and poor. He's a stranger to the young people of our day who are living in total ignorance of Jesus. It's a great tragedy. A great tragedy. We have enjoyed such great benefits from his hand. we have had his words to read and to listen to. We have had such evidences of his grace. Our history is littered with the revivings that he has sent and the deliverances that he has given. We have such a great heritage of the work of Jesus. But he's a stranger here. Isn't it remarkable that the rugby and the cricket, they sing Jerusalem. What a crazy thing that is. And they sing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And they have no idea what they're singing. Jesus Christ is a stranger in his world. But there's more here. Jesus Christ is not only a stranger in his world, he's a stranger in his church. And it's not only the visible church, this kind of broader thing that you could call Christianity. But Jesus Christ, there are times when Jesus Christ is a stranger among his own true people, among his real disciples. And that's what happens in our text. It's in the moment of his death and his resurrection that Jesus becomes separated from his disciples. And it's almost as if he becomes estranged to them. He becomes a stranger to them, and they are a stranger to him. Now, why does that happen? What is the root cause of this estrangement? The answer is surely, the key to it is surely in the words of the angels. It's there in verse 7, or 6. Remember how he spake unto you. Remember how he spake unto you. And the root cause is this, that they didn't listen to Jesus. They didn't remember the words of Jesus. They didn't take to heart all that he told them. And so the angel has to remind them of what it was that he told them. Why was it that they didn't listen? Why was it that they didn't remember? Why was it that they didn't take it to heart? It was because it didn't fit with their preconceived ideas about who Messiah was and what Messiah was coming to do. And so they receive, they hear what he says, but they say, no, that's not going to happen. No, that's, you got that wrong. And so what they end up doing is they park those aspects of Jesus' teaching that didn't fit with their theology. They kind of park them over there. And they ignore them. And it's that parking of Jesus' ministry, Jesus' words to them, that leads to this estrangement. Because if they'd embraced that, they would have understood what happened. But now there's this distance between them because they were parking his words. It's interesting, this estrangement between Jesus and his disciples, it doesn't come from his desire. It's not the result of what he is doing. He did tell them. He did warn them repeatedly. But you know, their preconceived ideas, they were not going to be shifted. No, it was very difficult for their preconceived theologies and notions to fall in line with the plan of God. And you know, it's the same today. The same in our churches, even our evangelical churches today. There is a great distance between Jesus and us. Now let's try and illustrate that. Let me ask you a question. I know it's uncomfortable, but sometimes we need to ask uncomfortable questions. When did you last experience the presence of Jesus in a service in this chapel? Now I know that many will say, I have no idea what you're talking about. And that serves to illustrate what I'm saying even more. That when God's people have no idea what the presence of Jesus really means, something is desperately wrong. But why does this happen to us? Well, there are many reasons. One of them is that we have an unrealistic appraisal of where we're at as a people. We become confident in our own resources and our own ability, and we end up drifting away from our reliance upon Jesus Christ. Sometimes it's that we see things happening in our world and even in our church, and it doesn't fit with our preconceived notions about how a church should operate and our theology of the end times. And so what do? Well, we park those truths over there. They're inconvenient. We can't handle them. Just leave them on the shelf. Or it may be that the demands that Jesus makes upon us to take up our cross daily and follow him are just too much. And so imperceptibly, we drift slowly, millimeters at the start, we drift slowly, 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 further and further away from Jesus. And we end up in the place that the church in Laodicea ended up. Jesus Christ is outside the door. Oh yeah, we're happy inside, but he's outside. Now, we need to understand that it's not the will of Jesus that it should be like this. It's not that Jesus enjoys being on the outside. It's not that he enjoys the cold fresh air and that he's an outside person. No. Jesus says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. He wants to be in with us. Have you heard him? Do you want Jesus in? Jesus is at times a stranger in his church. But it's interesting, those words in Revelation reveal another aspect to this. Behold, I stand at the door and knock, says Jesus. If any man hear my voice, any man, all one, this doesn't just operate on an on a corporate level, it operates on an individual level, to you and me personally with Jesus. Jesus is not just a stranger in his world. He's not just at times a stranger in his church. Sometimes he's a stranger in our souls. Now I want us to explore this in a bit more detail, because this is much more personal and much more important, if we can say that. I want us to explore first the strangeness of Christ to them and to us. You see, Jesus is not just a stranger in Jerusalem. He's not just become separated from his disciples as a group. he's a stranger to Cleopas and his companion. Now, it's not that the appearance of Jesus had changed. It's not that his countenance had changed. It wasn't that he was an apparition. Notice clearly what it says. Their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And if you contrast that with verse 31, it says their eyes were opened and they knew him. So holden clearly means closed. Their eyes were closed. They were clearly held back from recognizing him. Jesus is there, but they don't twig. Now, of course, this is not unique. You read John's account of the resurrection, and there are two times in his account, two occasions when the same thing happens. Mary's outside the tomb, and she sees the gardener. She doesn't recognize him. And then later in the next chapter, the disciples are in the boat, fishing, and Jesus is on the shore, and they don't recognize him. Why? Why does this happen? Is it that their desire for him was somehow faulty? Was it that, like the Jews, they'd rejected him? The answer is clearly no. Cleopas and his companion, they constrain Jesus to stay with them. They really want him there. However defective their understanding, and clearly their expression of it is not in the fullest sense that you would expect a believer to say, they clearly wanted him. Now let me ask you, do you want to get closer to Jesus? Do you want him? Are you longing for Jesus? Are you longing to enjoy the presence of Jesus in the way that maybe you once did? Well, why does this estrangement happen between our souls and Jesus? Was it that he no longer wanted to be with them? Well, that couldn't be further from the truth. You can see in the text just how much he wanted to be with them. He caught up with them. He went with them. He initiated the conversation with them. He drew out of them the reason for their sadness. He is careful in opening the scriptures to them and teaching them. He accepted their invitation to come into their home. Yes, Jesus wanted to be with them. But the sadness of the situation is this. They are so close to being comforted with the presence of Jesus, but they don't get it. They don't understand it. They don't see just how close he really is. The estrangement doesn't lie with him. Somehow it lies with them. They are still strangers to him and to God's plan. And sometimes this happens to us. Our faith at times can be so beaten down, so smashed, that we fail to grasp the comfort of Jesus. When it's right in front of our faces, sometimes we fail to grasp the reality of the situation. We fail to grasp who Jesus is and who we are with God. What does Paul say in Ephesians? Now therefore, ye are no more strangers and followers, strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God. That's how God sees it. You are not a stranger to God. So, what should we do if we sense that Jesus is not as close to us as he used to be? What should we do? What did they do? Maybe we can get some lessons from what they did. What did they do? They talked about him between themselves. That's the first thing they did. And that's what we must do. And they especially spoke about his death and his resurrection. And the sad thing is that you often come into church and you hear people talking about anything and everything except Jesus and his death and resurrection. My friends, we need to commune with one another. We need to reason with one another, even in our times of sadness, about Jesus. We need to share in our joys and in our sorrows, Jesus. In our excitements and in our disappointments, we need to talk about Jesus. And it was in their talking about Jesus that he drew near. And it's interesting that that is a theme that reappears in verse 36. As they thus spake, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said, peace be unto you. Talk about Jesus. Why? Malachi 3:16, they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it. There's always an eavesdropper on your conversations, and especially when you're talking about Jesus. God is listening in. And a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and a thought upon his name. God says to his angel, just write that down, will you, what they're talking about? Just make a note of that. And what happens? When Jesus draws near and he finds that we're talking about him, his heart is stirred. His heart is stirred. And it's at this point that they are closer to Jesus than they imagined. What else should we do? What did they do? Bear a good testimony to Jesus. You know, these two, they spoke, yes, they're slightly guarded because they're not sure who he is. But clearly they're speaking highly of him. We thought he was a prophet. Prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. They are identifying with him and who they thought he was. Tell me, do you speak highly of Jesus? Even to people you don't know? They presented him as their Redeemer and as their Messiah. Is that how you speak of Jesus? To people you meet? They were much closer than they imagined to Jesus. Thirdly, they received a rebuke from Jesus. Tell me, are you willing for Jesus to draw near to you and say, you've got this a bit wrong? We don't really like that. But if you want to be close to Jesus, you have to be willing to receive that. And what was it that they got wrong? The same things that we get wrong. Folly and lethargy. What does he say? Fools and slow of heart. That's us. Slow of heart. They were much closer at this point to Jesus than they imagined. What else? Be in the Word. Be in the Word. Read the Bible. Listen to it being preached from discerning spiritual men. It's not about big name preachers. They didn't even know who he was. But they loved his word. It wasn't that there was novelty, but there was spiritual insight. It wasn't that there were new ideas, but there was new light on old ideas. The focus was Christ. And it was fresh in their understanding. They had a fresh view of Jesus, a fresh view of the place of Jesus in the plan of God. And this came from the scriptures, from Moses and through to the prophets. Listen, my friends, never abandon the Old Testament, because it's there in the Tanakh you will find such comfort, especially about the person of Jesus, who he was and what his place was in the plan of God. And it's at this point that they are so much closer to Jesus, their hearts burned within them. There was divine light coming into their souls, divine heat. Their souls were glowing with warm affection for Jesus. And that, my friends, should be the impact of the preaching of the word. If the preaching of the word never makes our hearts glow within us, something's wrong. Something's missing. But it's interesting that while they sense this glow inside them, they're unable to connect it with the closeness of Jesus. They still don't make the connection, but they are much closer than they thought. Fifthly, remain generous spirited. You know, there are times when sadness comes into our souls and we retract into our shells. We become frustrated and even mean-spirited. That wasn't Cleopas. Cleopas and his companion, they pressurized Jesus to stay with them. And it was in this warm-hearted hospitality that Jesus seizes the initiative to reveal himself to them. So, how does Jesus reveal himself to them and to us? Well, certainly in earnest discussions about Christ and who he is, and in the preaching of Christ. But clearly there's something closer here. They come closer. If we were to take the words of Jesus in Revelation, he supped with them. They invite him in and he sups with them. No doubt they provided water for him to wash his feet, and he reclines with them at the table. But even that is not quite enough. And what happens here is quite remarkable. The stranger does something very unusual. He assumes the role of the host. Did you notice that? The stranger acts as if he is the host. What does he do? He reaches across the table and takes the bread. That was Cleopas's bread. What's he doing? Then what does he do? He blesses the bread with all his authority and affection. That was Cleopas's role as head of the house. Then what does he do? He breaks the bread. That was Cleopas's role. Then he gave the bread to them. He gave their bread to them. That was what Cleopas should have been doing. Ah, but Jesus does it, their guest. It's all very humbling. But it's in this action that Jesus reveals to them who he is. It's in the taking, the blessing, the breaking, and the giving that he discloses his identity. There was something about those four things that said to them, Jesus. Jesus. The penny drops. He's with us. He's with us. He's with them. He's fellowshipping with them. He's right there with them. And in that brief moment, heaven on earth has arrived for them. Jesus is with them. And then he's gone. she's gone. Now, what is the effect of this on them? Firstly, they recognize the reality of the experience of their hearts being warmed before. They now realize the significance of what had happened on the road. Their hearts being warmed. They now work out what that was about. That silent, hidden warming of their hearts. The work of the Spirit in bringing ardor and enlivening to their hearts. And they now begin to see that secret work and see it for what it was and interpret it for what it was. But also they begin to verbalize it when they didn't verbalize it before. They never said anything about it before. It was just going on. Ah, now they talk about it. They recognize that they were beginning to be revived then, when they were in the Word. Interestingly, they are now quick to discuss between themselves their experience, their shared experience in the closeness of Jesus. And if you've experienced the closeness of Jesus, you should be sharing it discreetly with others who've experienced the same thing. But they couldn't keep it to themselves. No. This meeting with Jesus was so electrifying that another 7 miles in the dark, with all the attendant dangers that represented on the road, was no barrier to them. It was a no-brainer. They must get back and tell the disciples they had been with Jesus. They had been with him. Not tomorrow. No, that's too late. Now, today, they must tell. We've been with Jesus. He's been here. Listen, my friends, we need to be seeking and longing for and yearning for the presence of Jesus. And when he comes, he refreshes our souls. He transforms our hearts and he invigorates us as Christian people. O Jesus, come, my soul doth groan for naught, but for thyself alone, thou art the pearl of price. That's William Williams. Is that you? Are you saying to Jesus, come in and sup with me? Come in and sup with me. Listen, my friends, Jesus wants to be in. Don't keep him out any longer. Amen.